If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here in Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Finn Martin. Hi Finn, no big introduction this week, just straight to the point. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. Hope everybody out there listening is very well also. Hope you haven't been going mad and stockpiling things like toilet rolls and pasta and paracetamol. The world's gone mad, Kenny.
If you are somebody who has went to a store and bought 6 different packs of toilet roll, you need medical assistance for different reasons. Because you're just an arsehole, is really the point. So the coronavirus is like the flu in some ways, right? That's what the symptoms are. That's the point. What do you need all this toilet roll for? You're not going to get the shits from it. And if you do, just do as some people in India and stuff do. Use water, use the shower. Like, what? I was at Costco on Saturday, and Costco actually had to put a ration on toilet paper so that people could only buy one pack per person. Now, in Costco, it's 45 rolls in a pack. So when I'm saying one pack, it's like 45 rolls. That's all you can get. And we were at the till, and the woman, I was like, this is insane. Like, what are these people all about? And she was like shaking her head, and she said, yeah, we've had to ration it to one per customer so that when the traders come in tomorrow, they're still able to buy stuff. And I'm like, I just didn't see it. You cannot buy hand sanitizer anywhere. It's
yes,
mad.
You can't find that in Lancaster either. I went into town last week looking for some. All sold out.
All sold out everywhere. It's insane. So I mean, I was talking to you about this off air. There's a lot of scaremongering going on, and you know, you should be careful. You should wash your hands. You should make sure that, you know, you take care of yourself. But like, this is not the bubonic plague, everybody. Do you know right now? So as an example, there are this is yesterday, so maybe there's more, but like, there were 11 confirmed cases in Scotland of the coronavirus, right? So there are about 6 million people in Scotland. That's the number that I saw. That means that there is a 1 in 700,000 chance that you would get it. So almost 1 in a million. It's probably less in England. It's crazy.
Yeah, just calm down, everyone. That's the message coming from Inside the Ropes, the official stance of the Power Slam podcast. Calm down. Hopefully we'll be all right.
Now, let me ask you a question, Finn. Personal question. Yes. How many rolls of toilet paper do you have in your house? Is it over 20?
No, it's fewer than that.
I only have 7.
7,
I've got a 20.
So you managed to resist the temptation to stock up when you went to Costco?
I was going to get toilet paper, and I was just so disgusted by everything that I saw that I was like, I'm not participating in this. I can't.
You're taking a stand, Kenny. You know, you're setting the example, as you always do, taking the moral high ground. You know, you are our spiritual leader. We all look up to you for direction.
Okay, all right, you've hammed it up enough. So, we've got lots to talk about this week, as always. The road to WrestleMania is very much on. And, you know, Elimination Chamber happened. You can listen to Sandra and I talk about the full card over in Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. But before Elimination Chamber, we did have Friday Night SmackDown, which was a completely forgettable show in most ways. There was a moment of bliss with the NWO, which was designed to get Sami Zayn, Cesaro, and Shinsuke Nakamura over. But the biggest thing on SmackDown, I guess the only real notable thing, was the Firefly Funhouse about John Cena. Now, last week, Finn, you had a lot to say and it wasn't super complimentary to Mr. Cena. What did you think of the Firefly Funhouse and the direction of them using Cena's former burial of Wyatt in the story?
I mean, at least that burial of Bray Wyatt 6 years ago at WrestleMania 30 has been used for something. It's come in handy at long last. Who could have predicted this? Well, probably Kenny. Probably it was the master plan from the very beginning, right? They were thinking that far ahead.
I mean, this is the same company that at SummerSlam 2013 had Randy Orton cash in and Daniel Bryan, knowing that at WrestleMania it would have reached a fever pitch the next year and Daniel Bryan would lift the title at WrestleMania after beating Triple H, Batista and Orton in one night.
All part of the master plan. All those burials of Daniel Bryan in the interim, all part of the plan to get Bryan over.
People putting out leaks pretend there was going to be a pre-show match with Sheamus. All a masterful ruse.
Absolutely, yeah. That all led to this amazing peak, you know, WrestleMania, Daniel Bryan, huge star, one of the great stories they ever told. I mean, these people are geniuses. We just look up to them, just as I look up to you, Kenny. But anyway, getting back to SmackDown, match 6 from Buffalo, New York. It was quite funny, wasn't it? Bray's there, why John Cena? Then suddenly we had Rambling Rabbit popped up. And he answered the question, why John Cena? Asked Bray. I know, said Rambling. It's because John Cena totally destroyed you 6 years ago at WrestleMania. Thus, you began a downward spiral of negativity and failure in your personal and professional life. Then Rambling Rabbit goes, you can't see me, it disappeared. And then we went to a close-up of Bray. He's got this sickliest grin you could ever see. And he just goes faintly, yowie wowie. And that was actually really funny. So they've managed to capitalize on what happened 6 years ago to turn this into a story to try and make this match matter. And then Wyatt did pretty good promo talking about how life's a circle and, you know, had Cena not destroyed him back in 2014, then the Funhouse might never have happened. Hey, we can thank Cena for that. You know, all those other burials he did of basically everyone he ever faced, you know, they were probably all part of a master plan. And in years to come, we'll get something like the Funhouse with the Rusev, you know, all these other guys. It's just going to happen, Kenny. It's inevitable.
The other thing I was wondering when I was watching it was, you know, Wyatt's setting all this up and he's got Rambling Rabbit being a wee scamp, kind of, you know, prodding at him. I'm curious as we get to WrestleMania, you know, so I mean, this week's SmackDown coming is going to be the March 13th episode. So we've got 13th, 20th, 27th, just 4 SmackDowns until WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if, I mean, I'm hoping that Cena is going to be on at least one of those episodes to build this match because, you know, if you look back at the WrestleMania 31 match that Wyatt had when he fought The Undertaker and he had to do all the build on his own, I think Cena actually, this would be one of the ones I would like to see him around for, and I think that Cena would, you know, for all the things that you knock about him, I think he would sell the gravitas of The Fiend. I don't think he would just, like, laugh in his face or anything. So I think you do need to see Cena there, and you need to see them at least face off one time before they face off in Tampa.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, I think we should at least have that beatdown angle. I mean, I mentioned on the podcast last week, they should have had Fiend destroy Cena, and then Cena appeared on this week's show to say, you know, sorry about all the full-timers, but I've got to have my revenge. There's no way that I can let this lie. You know, we have to have a match, so I apologize to the people whose place I've taken, but there's, you know, honor at stake and blah, blah, blah. So I think we are going to have an appearance from Cena between now and WrestleMania, on which presumably Fiend will give Cena a taste of the mandible claw, or him with Sister Abigail or whatever. Something like that, you would think. I mean, I do actually envisage Cena losing to the Fiend at WrestleMania. So, I mean, that seems to me to be the only outcome. It's hard for me to believe that Cena is coming back for this one match, which some are saying will be his final match, and I think it will be. to beat the Fiend. I can't imagine he would do that. And there's really no purpose for him to do that now. And if this is his last match, I'm not saying it's going to be his last appearance, because he probably will appear for WWE again in future. But I think this will be his last match. Then he really has to lose. And there's no reason for him to win. And I think after he loses, he'll get up, look to the audience, you know, full of pathos. You know, he's an actor now. You know, you knew that, Kenny. Well, he's been an actor for years. He was in the Marine, for God's sake, wasn't he?
So, well, I mean, he's been... I watched his Ruthless Aggression special on the network. You know, he's been acting since 2000 with WWF.
Right. Well, you know, I mean...
He played a doctor. He played a children's entertainer.
Yeah.
He played those two roles.
Well... Okay, iconic, you know, so iconic. I never even heard of either of them. But no, in all sense, I mean, he's been doing the acting thing on and off for years, hasn't he? So, I mean, I think after he loses the Fiend, you know, stand up, look to the audience, you know, give him the bow, you know, and get the big hand, and it'll be this big emotional WrestleMania moment that will then completely erase from memory the defeat that he just suffered to the Fiend. You know, in true Hogan fashion, that's how what we'll remember. Cena there bowing to the crowd and everyone giving him a big hand. So, you know, I think he needs to appear on SmackDown before then to take the beating from the Fiend, just to really give it some heat on the night. I think it will have heat anyway. I think people will be interested in the match, because I think a lot of people recognize that this probably will be his final match. I think it'll be his last match, but I think most fans will think, well, how many more matches is he really going to do? So, you know, this is probably going to be it. But I mean, that was the best thing on SmackDown. And I thought Wyatt did a really good job in the Funhouse. And he's saying, you know, time can either hurt or heal you, you know. And he was saying, you know, if Cena hadn't, you know, wrecked him back in 2014, then the Firefly Funhouse would have never been necessary. It would never have existed. So, I mean, even if Cena doesn't appear, I think Wyatt can make it work with these Funhouse segments, because they can do basically anything, that Funhouse, can't they?
You would think that given the Friday night before WrestleMania, that SmackDown will be in Tampa. So yeah, maybe that's the one to do it. Because Cena will be in town, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Funhouse, I was happy with it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what they do next with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Wyatt's out there having to do a promo each week, because the Funhouse is this surreal, larger-than-life, crazy environment, you know, semi-detached from WWE. And then, you know, anything is possible in the Funhouse, and there's so many different avenues that can go down to promote this match single-handedly, Wyatt, with his puppets on the show. So that was pretty good. I mean, the opening segment was all right with Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross. It was quite funny when Nikki Cross, Scott Hall, Sean Waltman and Kevin Nash came out first. It was quite funny when Nikki Cross started marking out for them and Alexa told her off. And then Sami Zayn, Nakamura and Cesaro came out and they sort of teased that there was going to be like a scrap. And then Braun Strowman came out and he ran off Sami and Cesaro and Nakamura, and then Strowman, you know, posed with Nash, Hall and Waltman at the end. So, I mean, at least this did serve the purpose of promoting the Intercontinental title match at Elimination Chamber. But, I mean, they could have done it in a lot less time. And I really felt like they could have given Nash, Hall and Waltman more lines. I felt like the scripting for them was pretty poor, actually. They could have done a lot more than they did, you know, without overshadowing the purpose of this, which was Strowman versus Sami Cesaro and Nakamura. But, I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot else on the show worth talking about. I mean, Sheamus versus Apollo Crews. I mean, this is still going on. He destroys Crews. We had the little interaction backstage between Crews and Shorty G. And Shorty G is saying to Crews, you know, if you need my help, you know, just give me the nod. And then Crews doesn't. And, like, Crews just looked like a fool here. Can you work out where this is going? I mean, you probably don't care, but presumably it's going somewhere, because it is a week-to-week storyline that, you know, presumably has a destination.
I mean, initially I thought Sheamus beating people up was going to lead to Sheamus and Braun Strowman for the Intercontinental title, and now that's obviously not the plan, so I have no idea where it's going. I mean, how can you possibly care about Shorty G or Apollo Crews beating Sheamus because he just keeps beating them both. So
yeah,
what's the point?
They're supposed to be baby faces and they look like fools because they can't agree on anything and unite for the greater good of their cause. Sheamus continues to squash them. So they just look like buffoons. I did quite enjoy the backstage segment with Drew Gulak. You know, he was talking to Drake Maverick, wasn't he? And saying that he's identified a weakness in Daniel Bryan's repertoire. And then Bryan rocked up and said, well, you know, if you know how to beat me, you know, why don't you give it a try at Elimination Chamber on Sunday? So at least they did something to promote that match. Not much, but at least they gave it a little bit of storyline support there. What else did we have? Mandy Rose, she refused to accept Otis's apology when he came up to her and said, listen, I'm sorry that I was late for our Valentine's Day date, but I did receive a text. That storyline's still simmering. We still don't know who sent the text yet. I mean, we've got a good idea, haven't we, Kenny? But we still don't know.
When are we going to find out that it's Sonya Deville? Is the question. I tell you, so Finn, obviously, we've talked a little bit about SmackDown, but I don't think that we have covered the big news story yet that's happened.
That?
Before we get to Elimination Chamber, Raw, Blood and Guts, Deadline have reported that WWE superstar Lana will be co-starring in the new Bruce Willis-led sci-fi action movie, Cosmic Sin. She will be playing the role of Saul, who is described as the best sniper in the galaxy and lead assassin fighting for the human race against an alien invasion. The synopsis for the movie is, the story follows a group of warriors and scientists who must fight to protect and save their race when a hostile alien species with the power to infect and take over human hosts sets its sights on a futuristic human society. So my question to you, Finn, is, can you understand this casting choice?
Well, I mean, yes, because Bruce Willis, obviously he was a big star in the late 80s, throughout the 90s, probably into the 2000s. But when was the last film? What was the last film that Bruce Willis did that anyone cared about? I mean, he's moved down the pecking order a fair old bit, hasn't he?
Well, when was the last Die Hard? He did like a reboot Die Hard or something, didn't he? Die Hard 4 or something, Die Hard 5, whatever it was.
That was years ago. I don't think that really... I mean, it might have done some decent business because it was part of the Die Hard franchise. But I mean, Bruce Willis isn't the star that he used to be. I mean, I haven't seen him in anything recently. I might have seen some clips, but
the last thing I remember him doing that was big was his appearance on Friends when he was in that, and he was played like Jennifer Aniston's like older boyfriend, and that was, let me just see when that was. Bruce Willis, Friends. He was in Friends in 2003.
Wow, well, that's 17 years ago. So, I mean, Bruce Willis is a guy to me who's just been funning it in for so long. You know, he's a guy that just doesn't care anymore. He's like that overpaid guy in WCW. Kevin Nash, actually, towards the end, who just turns up and can't be arsed. So, I mean, okay, Lana's been chosen for this, but, I mean, which big star in Hollywood is really going to want to work with Bruce Willis right now? I wouldn't have thought there'd be too many, because being in a Bruce Willis film doesn't mean what it did 25 years ago, for obvious reasons. But, I mean, you know, if there's a lot of money behind this film, is it a big budget movie, Kenny? Do we know how much money's behind it?
I do not. That's all the information I have about Cosmic Sin.
I mean, it sounds dreadful. But, I mean, it could be a good gig for her. And, you know, look on the bright side, Ken. You won't have to comment on her appearances on Raw anymore because she won't be on Raw. She wasn't on Raw this week.
That's true. That is true. I mean, every cloud and all that. I'm trying to see if I can find any... No, I can't find any information about the budget. But I would just like to thank... the writers and the producers,
director,
everybody involved in that movie for giving me a reprieve from one of the worst actresses I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, she may surprise you. I mean, and this could be, I mean, Lana, let's face it, she's got nothing to lose starring in this film. I know she did some bit part work before She signed up for WWE. I think she was in an episode of Banshee right at the very start, which was a series that I was a huge fan of. I thought it was a tremendous series. It was for Cinemax. So I know she had done some bit part work before she got involved in wrestling. But for her, this is probably a no-lose proposition. She's probably getting paid handsomely. I'm sure it's a high six-figure or possibly seven-figure gig. I mean, what's she got to lose? You know, I mean, what should we have a whole lot going on Raw at the moment?
She also stars in a movie in 2016 with Edge called Interrogation. There you go. The premise was, a bomb is set to go off on one of the busiest betting days of the year, so a smart interrogator is called in to get answers from the prime suspect. But as time begins to end, they both soon discover that there is a larger plan in store for them.
Wow, I've never seen that film, and I just can't believe it. I'm going to add that to the list, you know.
She also had a cameo in Countdown, which was a 2016 WWE film with Dolph Ziggler and Kane.
Okay, yeah, I do remember that one. I remember that one being advertised on WWE TV. Was that set in like a stadium or somewhere like that?
Yes, I think it was.
That's right. Yeah. So. It does ring a faint bell.
And then she also, I've not seen these movies, but apparently she was in the first two Pitch Perfect movies.
Oh, was she? Wow. I've seen parts of those films. But maybe it's just a bit part for her. But I mean, this is probably a great gig for her. I mean, you know, we're here sort of kind of mocking it, but I mean, this could be good for her. You know, she could be discovered in this and she could disappear off and become like the next WWE performer to become a big movie star.
Maybe. You never know. Maybe. Stranger thing. I mean, also, I didn't know this, but I think we should bring it to people's attention. She has an uncredited role, which really we should campaign for her to get her rightful credit for. She did appear in Big Mama's House 3. Big Mama's Like Father, Like Son with Martin Lawrence.
I haven't seen that. I don't know if I've seen Big Mama's House 2 or 1.
I don't think you're missing much, is the key. Oh, poor Lana. God bless her. But you're right. She should absolutely take this opportunity and get off my TV for a while. So good for her.
Yeah, good for her. Absolutely. In all sincerity, I mean, this could be a really good gig for her. So, I mean, you know, what the hell was she got? I mean, she had that run there with Rusev, you know, and Lashley and Liv Morgan. And you know, I mean, where exactly was she going to fit in the jigsaw over the next few months? It probably wasn't going to be anything more high profile than what she'd just done. So she's picked a good time to, you know, step off the good ship WWE and do a big budget movie, if indeed it is a big budget movie.
So we're not going to go into all of Elimination Chamber because obviously we covered it on Patreon, but I do want to go through the kind of big matches and moments. Drew Gulak and Daniel Bryan opened the show with a great wrestling match, went about 15 minutes. The question I have for you is, well, what do you think of the match, but also where does this leave Daniel Bryan for WrestleMania, and do you think that Drew Gulak is going to see any sort of momentum coming out of it?
Well, I mean, I'd like to see, I mean, where, first question, where does this leave Daniel Bryan going to WrestleMania? I have no idea. I think he's just going to be at best in a buffer match. I mean, I'd like to see him form a tag team with Drew Gulak. I think that would have potential. And what I like most about this match, I'll tell you what I like least about it, and I'm sure we're singing from the same hymn sheet here, Kenny, was some of those bumps that Bryan was taking.
Very uncomfortable.
I mean, and I watched the one that they showed on replay, I think two or three times, maybe it was more times than that. They showed it again and again. And it was Bryan hurling himself backwards, taking that ridiculous bump. It's not Drew who deserves any criticism for that. And by the way, Kenny, now that Drew McIntyre's getting the big push, how long before Drew Gulak becomes simply Gulak?
Don't give them ideas. They do not need any more ammunition.
But I mean, I really enjoyed this match. I like the way that Bryan rolled out of the ring at the start. You know, he's there having to re-strategize. You know, what's he going to do to beat this guy? Maybe Drew Gulak really has identified all his weaknesses, really does have his number. And I like the way that the announcers really played this up, you know, really emphasized this point that Bryan's there frustrated because Drew Gulak is matching him hold for hold, you know, as out strategized him in this matchup. So I really enjoyed that. In the end, Brian won with the yes lock. I mean, I don't think that was a surprise to anyone. But I mean, you know, what was, I think, the huge takeaway from this, the lasting image from me from this match, apart from those crazy bumps, was Brian pointing at Gulak afterwards and really just putting him over. I mean, when was the last time we saw somebody put his opponent over, you know, quite so enthusiastically, with such gumption, with such relish? I mean, Brian did so much for Gulak in this match. I mean, this was a huge night for Drew Gulak to me. And I hope that WWE capitalizes on this and does something with him. I mean, I'm not really going to say anything else about that because we've been let down so many times previously. But I'd like to see Brian and Drew Gulak become a tag team, because I don't really know where Brian fits into the framework over the next sort of few months. What exactly is he going to do? I don't really see a spot for him. Certainly not a spot that's a big spot. But in a team with Drew Gulak, I think there's a lot of mileage there between those two as an odd couple team.
I guess we'll see what happens. I hope it does lead to something better for Drew Gulak, because he proved here that he definitely can go, and he's proved before he's a good character. So hopefully they use him. One of the big matches that divides opinion, Finn, from Elimination Chamber was the tag team Elimination Chamber match, where Miz and Morrison successfully retained their tag team titles, SmackDown tag team titles, over the Usos, The New Day, Roode and Ziggler, Heavy Machinery, and the Lucha House Party. Some people loved the match, some people hated it. Where do you fall? What did you think? Was it a success or not?
I just want to mention one thing we didn't talk about this on SmackDown. I thought Heavy Machinery had a great night in the Gauntlet match at the end of SmackDown. They didn't win it. The Gauntlet match was to determine who would enter the Elimination Chamber match last, which team. So it was all six teams were in the Gauntlet match who were in the Elimination Chamber match. I guess the first point is, why were all these teams having an Elimination Chamber match, Kenny? I think that's the first question.
Well, so initially it was supposed to be Roman Reigns winning his title shot in the Elimination Chamber, and then they changed their mind.
Yeah.
So they asked the tag teams if they would want to do it, and they all said yes.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a great story.
So you're on the subs bench, and we're going to give you the Elimination Chamber match because all these other people don't need to bother with it anymore. The people who really needed it, well, they don't need it anymore, because Roman just rocked up and challenged Goldberg. And, well, Goldberg said, yeah, so, yeah, we don't need to bother with it. I mean, Roman Reigns wasn't even on SmackDown on Friday, was he, Kenny? You know, we don't even need to bother coming up with any story there. So we're just...
Well, there was no point. He wasn't even on Elimination Chamber, so they just gave Roman the weekend off.
Just give all those writers the week off. I mean, I think it seems like most of them take the week off anyway. I think most of them take the day off when they come in.
And now, also, is it a coincidence that Lucha House Party had probably one of their best nights and Kalisto was nowhere to be seen?
No coincidence there. Although I will say that spot where Lince Dorado climbed up to the roof and then did this ridiculous, like, shooting star press type maneuver off the chains, while everyone just stood there waiting to catch him, was like, you know, the end of kayfabe. Well, I mean, kayfabe's over anyway, but you know what I mean? It just looks so phony. It's like, what is the point of this? And then seconds later, Otis pinned Gran Metalik, making it doubly pointless. The fans just weren't into a lot of it. It wasn't until Machinery were buzzed into the match that the match came to life. Fans were just bored of, like, so much of this match. And I think a lot of them were just thinking, why is this taking place? What is the purpose of all of this? Machinery, and they had a really good night on SmackDown. And they really injected this thing with, you know, a bit of energy. And then we had all the big spots and the big stunts. You know, it felt a bit like an AEW match to me, like, you know, a bit of a stunt tumbling and trampoline match type thing. So, I mean, it lasted too long for me. I lost interest at various points, if I'm honest with you. I thought it did pick up towards the end. And there was some inventive spots in the match. There was some high-risk stuff. I mean, it was great seeing the Usos. They did like a double splash to eliminate Rude and Ziggler. And Morrison and Miz retained, which was the right result because it's obviously far too soon to take the title off them because since they only won it at Super Showdown, which was, what was that, 10 days earlier? Earlier. So it was obviously far too soon to take the title off Miz and Morrison. You know, but ultimately the match to me just felt pointless. There was some good action in there, but what was the point of it all? I'm not really sure what I would rather have seen. I would have to think about that. They basically screwed up all the storytelling going up to WrestleMania, going into WrestleMania so badly that it was just superfluous. Was the Elimination Chamber match here? It didn't need to happen.
Requirements. Well, the other problem was you had the New Day and the Usos, who are a feud from the past that people still kind of get a kick out of.
Yeah.
Then you had Heavy Machinery and Rude and Ziggler, who kind of have a feud going on anyway.
Yeah.
So then the champions, by default, were kind of an afterthought. And then they were the ones that had to retain. So it was kind of murky how you book it, because you're inevitably going to have to book it that one of the teams that isn't involved in a story has to win, and they're also the champions.
That's right. And there's no way they could have taken the title off them because they've only just given the title to them, and there was a story. That was about the only thing at Super Showdown that made any sense to me. So, I mean, they couldn't undo that, although I wouldn't put anything past them at this point. So, yeah, it just seemed like an exercise in, oh, let's see, you know, it's like, oh, well, let's just go out there and fill time and come up with some crazy dives to try and get a reaction from the audience, which they eventually did do. I mean, there's enough talent in this ring, or rather in this cage, that it wasn't going to be a total flop. But still, to me, it was probably the most pointless Elimination Chamber match I've ever seen. I don't think that's an unfair assessment.
Yeah, no, I mean, in terms of build and stakes, it definitely was. I mean, I had fun watching it. I thought it was a good match. But yeah, I mean, I can't argue with the stakes weren't really high. We did see the return of The Undertaker at, I was going to say Super Showdown there, at Elimination Chamber when AJ Styles... Wasn't it nice, though, Finn, that the club were outside for AJ Styles in a no DQ match and they just politely didn't get involved the entire match? With friends like that, who needs enemies? Anyway, they end up coming in.
It was like, are there any weapons used?
Yeah, nothing.
They brought a kendo stick in, and apparently it really hurts when you get hit with a kendo stick. I mean, it doesn't look like it does, but I'm told it really hurts when you get nailed with a kendo stick.
I hope to never have to experience it. But in the end, it was a 3-on-1 beatdown of Aleister Black. Then the club hold Aleister Black for AJ Styles to do the phenomenal forearm. Lights go out, lights come back on. It's Undertaker with a terrible, terrible hair night. He has the club by the throats. AJ goes for the phenomenal forearm. Taker catches him, chokeslam, light goes back off. Comes back on, Aleister Black does a black mask kick. 1, 2, 3, Aleister Black gets the win, and The Undertaker is gone into the night. Now, obviously, we'll cover Raw in a minute with AJ Styles' promo, but what did you make of the appearance and Aleister Black's win over AJ?
Well, I mean, the match was dying a brutal death prior to that. No one was interested in this match. I mean, it was kind of embarrassing how little interest there was in this matchup between these two. I mean, not surprising, given what happened to Styles at Super Showdown. I mean, he still hasn't recovered from that. I mean, his promo on Raw, I think, was going some way towards trying to salvage some of his dignity. But, I mean, he entered a match here that no one was really that interested in. I mean, Aleister Black, to me, is a guy that's... he's just not connecting with the audience as a babyface. And I'm not sure how he can. I'm not sure how they get him from where he is now to where they presumably would like him to be. They are featuring him, so it does seem that they haven't lost interest in him just yet. Although I think that's just around the corner. But yeah, I mean, we've got AJ Styles in there who can still go. We've got no DQ rules. We've got Anderson and Gallows at ringside. There's all these different things they could have done to make this match so much more interesting than it was. And it was just existed as a backdrop to set up an appearance by The Undertaker. As you said, his hair looked awful. He looked really old now. I mean, he really does. I mean, that promo that we're talking about this in a moment, I'm sure, that promo that Styles did on Raw, I'm listening to him thinking, there's too much truth in this promo for a heel. You're saying so much of what you're saying here is true, and you shouldn't be saying things that are true about a guy that really is many years past his best, as we all know. I mean, the best thing I can say about it was Undertaker turned up. People did respond. After lights went out, Undertaker flared, lights back on. Aleister Black's spinning kick of that mask did look really good. I'm going to say the finish did look really good. And after the Undertaker had warmed the crowd up, it did get a bit of a response. People did enjoy seeing Styles lose. So Black must have left the ring feeling slightly heartened by the result. But, I mean, that heat and that goodwill and that warmth and that appreciation was more linked to the Undertaker than him. You know, he was like steel. That was the Undertaker's. He was just borrowing it, you know. So that was the Undertaker's heat. Not his, or his. The audience warmth was for the Undertaker, not Aleister Black, and he ran off with it. So
he did. But Aleister Black got the big win. But one of the other big stories of the night was Sami Zayn became the new Intercontinental Champion in the 3-on-1 match against Braun Strowman. They all beat down Strowman, allowing Zayn to hit the Huluva kick. 1, 2, 3. Zayn is the champion. He now gets to hold that horrible, gaudy-looking belt. And Braun Strowman was defeated. How do we make sense of this? And what do you think it means? Is this a good thing that Sami Zayn's got the belt? Can it lead to good things? Talk me through your thoughts.
Well, I mean that doesn't lead to good things for Braun Strowman. I mean, the finish of the match looked really bad. It showed the Kinshasa that Nakamura nailed on Strowman. Strowman's by the post. That looked weak. And then Cesaro and Nakamura, they're taking Strowman up for a suplex. And then Zayn runs in with the running kick. And that didn't, I mean, it did make contact, but didn't look like it was something to knock out Braun Strowman. Certainly not the Braun Strowman of 2 years ago. And then Strowman went down. Zayn gets the pin. You know, Strowman doesn't kick out. And I mean, Strowman to me is now just a mid-carder. I mean, I've said this before. He's been flattened out like a, you know, 2 years ago, Braun was a guy that we were talking about. He could be champ. I mean, now he just feels a bit like a comedy character. And he did feel like SmackDown was an attempt to, you know, give him more credibility, you know, make him seem like a bigger deal than he was. And then they go and book this result on Sunday. And you can say, oh, well, it's 3 against 1. But prior to this result, you can't take Sami Zayn, Cesaro, or Nakamura seriously. They've all been reduced to, you know, low card performers. They've got no credibility anymore. So I thought this was a terrible night for Braun Strowman. Absolutely dismal.
Is there a way back for Strowman down the line, or do you think this just means that he is a mid card guy forevermore?
I think that's it now. I just don't see a way back for him. I mean, maybe when they turn him heel, they'll give him another push. You know, maybe they'll give him a shot at, I don't know, maybe they'll give him a shot at Roman Reigns later in the year after Roman Reigns is Universal Champ. Maybe they'll revisit that. I mean, that was fairly successful, wasn't it?
Yeah, you mentioned earlier on Daniel Bryan. Maybe WrestleMania is going to be Sami Zayn against Daniel Bryan for the IC title. Maybe that's a direction they could go in that gives Bryan something to do at WrestleMania.
Yeah, possibly. But, I mean, it just feels like a come down for Daniel Bryan. I mean, really, if you think about it, Seth Rollins, Kofi Kingston, Daniel Bryan all had like huge matches at WrestleMania last year. And like all of them, it's like, I mean, what a come down in a year. But Strowman, to me, this was just like a bit of a clown show, really. And it's a shame. You know, it really is. It's a shame that they've done this. But maybe, yeah, I mean, no doubt Braun will turn heel later in the year. And I imagine that when Roman becomes champ, which he obviously will at WrestleMania, he's going to need contenders. Probably they'll turn Braun again. And him and Roman can maybe have a pay-per-view feud. And maybe Braun can rise again. But right now, things are... I mean, we've talked, haven't we? We've been doing this podcast long enough now, Kenny, that we always talk about Braun and his WrestleMania. My God, it's not looking like it's going to be another good WrestleMania for Braun.
No, I think that guy will be searching his entire career for a WrestleMania moment, because there hasn't been one. And he's in the Battle Royal this year. The only way he's not in the Battle Royal to me is if he ends up in like a multi-man match for the IC title. Yeah. That seems to be his only way of getting into something else at Mania.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they can do a ladder match or something like that and get a lot of talented players in a match that matters. I mean, the only problem is there's so many big matches already announced. Is there going to be room for another big match? I just feel like all the other matches that are going to be announced now are going to be like buffer matches that aren't really going to be given more than 5 or 6 minutes. And the problem with a ladder match with, say, 6 participants, if you factor in the entrances, that takes up quite a lot of pay-per-view time. Just mentioned Street Profits versus Seth Rollins and Murphy. I mean, what a flop that match was, Kenny. I just could not believe how flat it was.
Never ended.
Oh.
20 minutes just never ended.
So, I mean, Kevin Owens comes out, you know, he... at least people responded when Owens walked through the crowd. He was eating popcorn. He distracted Seth. You know, Montez Ford ended up pinning Murphy. But yeah, what a disappointment. Felt like the Street Profits really had some momentum prior to this match. And between this and that, you know, never-ending Raw main event in which Montez Ford was pinned, feels like, you know, one step forward, 2 steps back for the Street Profits. A very familiar sensation for Raw talent, Kenny.
And then the main event of the show was the Elimination Chamber for the Raw Women. The winner would go on to face Becky Lynch at WrestleMania. This was the Shayna Baszler show. She is, I think they mentioned it in commentary the next night on Raw, she is the first ever person to win an Elimination Chamber by eliminating all 5 other participants. She went through all of them with Asuka at the end. Again, this is kind of divided opinion. Some people really loved that she was booked like a monster. Some people didn't like the way it was booked. How effective was this in getting Shayna Baszler ready for Becky at WrestleMania?
Didn't really feel like it was very effective on the night. Not much in the way of reaction to Shayna Baszler. Partly because the opposition was just so weak. I mean, you know, you look at this match and it's no wonder that people weren't really that into it. And Shayna is still new, of course, to the main roster. So people don't really know her yet. I mean, you know, a few weeks back when she ended, I think it was the February 10th episode of Raw, when she supposedly bit Becky Lynch in the back of the neck. They've gone nowhere with that, have they? What exactly was the point of that? I'm in the dark. I can't work out why she did that, and it hasn't gone anywhere. So she had this match against Natalia, Ruby Riott, Sarah Logan, Liv Morgan and Asuka. And there was only Asuka who came in last, who was really framed as somebody that would be a match for Shayna in the cage, in the chamber. And so, I mean, it was the sort of match where on one hand, Shayna needed a show of force. She needed to be dominant because they're trying to present her as a credible challenger to Becky Lynch at WrestleMania, so she needed to look strong here. But the flip side to that is that the performers or wrestlers she was up against, with the exception of Asuka, none of them are over, none of them any match really for anyone. So by defeating them, who had she really beaten? I mean, admittedly, she ended up, you know, it was a one-on-one showdown at the end with Asuka, and Asuka does have some credibility, she does have status, and people do believe in her. And I think I would have liked to have seen more of a match between those two, Kenny. And I think, you know, almost like, remember the famous finish of the Undertaker, the famous finish of the Royal Rumble where the Undertaker and Shawn Michaels went back and forth for, I think it was about 7 or 8 minutes.
Yeah, the 2007 Royal Rumble.
That's right. I really feel like that's what they needed here. We need Asuka and Shayna to really have a match at the end and put something exciting together. Some like stellar sequences, so we could really see what Shayna was made of. Because I mean, the main roster audiences who aren't watching NXT haven't really seen Shayna do that much yet. I mean, the match she had last week with Kairi Sane on Raw was a total flop. She didn't really do that much in the Raw Rumble match. Okay, she eliminated a lot of people, but we didn't really see that much from her there. So I think I would have liked to have seen that. And I think had we had sort of 4 or 5 minutes of those two going back and forth, with the same outcome, Shayna winning with the Kirifuda clutch, I think that would have achieved a lot more than what they did serve up on the night. So yes, she looked strong, but the match wasn't very exciting. And I think in order to really get Shayna where she needs to be, it needed to deliver more than it did. Is that a fair point?
Yeah, no, I think it is a fair point. I like the booking overall. I think that the big thing that I agree with you, I think Asuka and Shayna needed more time. But I also think the problem was, had they done exactly what they had done, had Shayna beat everybody, and then the, you know, basically Shayna's waiting for Asuka for 3 minutes, that would have been good. But we had her waiting for Liv for 3 minutes, we had her waiting for Asuka. It just felt like she was waiting for too long, and it kind of killed the live crowd. They were kind of, it needed to be the only wait was Asuka, and then that went on a bit longer. And how great is Asuka? Do you know what I mean? People underestimate Asuka sometimes. Like, she is just so great. She knows her character. She knows who she is as a wrestler. And even though she was only in there for 3 minutes, I could have watched them for another 15 minutes easy.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, she was the only person. I mean, that was the only confrontation in this match that anyone was really salivating over. And then they kind of shortchanged us on it. I mean, Natalia tried to build herself up on a promo earlier in the show, talking about unleashing her legacy in the match, whatever that means. I mean, God, I mean, Natalia. Well,
the other great part of the promo was, she said, you know, I just can't believe what Randy Orton did to Beth Phoenix. You mean when the wrestler gave the other pro wrestler one wrestling move? You can't believe that happened?
I mean, everything when Natalia's just on the mic, it's like a rib, isn't it? You know, they just write Natalia, just go and say this, you look like an idiot. You know, but just do your best. And it's always so wooden, phony and unconvincing. I mean, she should be just forbidden from coming within 20 feet of a microphone. Every time she does a promo, she gets less over. You know, it's like an act of self-harm. And then, like, in this match, she was just crushed by Shayna. And you could say, oh, well, of course she was going to be crushed by Shayna because they've got to build Shayna up. But Natalia, really, given that she's been, how long has she been in WWE? Is it 10, 11 years now?
13 years. Did she not sign like 07? Like a long time ago.
Okay, well, she's been there forever. So, I mean, she should have really had some hot spots. But, I mean, maybe that wouldn't have really worked because she's just not over. And this match was pretty much scuppered from the off in terms of, you know, really generating any excitement and, you know, heat in the venue. And people just weren't into it. So, I mean, you know, and then the next night on Raw with that Becky Lynch promo, it's like, oh, my God, Shayna's just, she's just, this show of force, she's just been dominant. She's just eliminated 5 people from the Elimination Chamber match. And Becky Lynch called her a black hole of charisma and a constipated-looking robot. And I was just like, what? What are you doing saying this about your WrestleMania opponent who's just beaten everyone? So, I mean, that promo from Becky Lynch the next night, I mean, to me, that was counterproductive. You're trying to get Shayna over, which hopefully you are. And instead, you're just almost mocking her.
Well, we will get to Raw in just a moment. Before we do, though, I do want to ask you. It was announced, I think, after we spoke last week. But anyway, AEW have announced that their version of War Games, Blood and Guts, is going to go ahead on Wednesday, March 25th in Newark, New Jersey. And it's announced it's going to be the Inner Circle against the Elite. Jericho,
yes.
Hager, Guevara, and Santana and Ortiz against Cody, Paige, Omega, and the Young Bucks. What do you think of this pairing or this match? And also, do you think that the War Games concept is something that's going to get over in AEW? Do you think, because the WWE version has a lot of people like it, but a lot of people don't like it. Do you think AEW can fare any better in regards to getting it over?
Well, I mean, the clue's in the title. So they're going to do it like they used to, you know, they do the War Games matches in Jim Crockett Promotions back in 87, 88, 89. Well, actually, there wasn't any blood in the 89 one, and that was WCW back then. But yeah, the War Games match is when Dusty first invented it, and then obviously there's a famous one at WrestleWar 1982 with all blood, which to me was the greatest War Games match ever. We've talked about that one before. So I think they're going to come at it very differently to how NXT has done. I mean, and they're going to have to. They can't do like a... Presumably, they're not going to do a 40-minute match on TV. I mean, they could do, I suppose. They've got a two-hour show, right, Kenny?
Yeah, and it's going to be... I think they've already sold 10,000 tickets to the... So it's probably going to be their biggest gate they've ever had.
Yeah.
So,
I mean...
Just give the second hour of TV to that match.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, we've reviewed the War Games matches that NXT has done. And as we said before, you can't fault the effort that goes into them. And they were just this, you know, Herculean amount of work that's gone into them. But they don't need to be 40 minutes. And they end up doing too much. And to me, that type of match should be like 20, 21 minutes, something like that.
Well, the biggest problem with, for me, it's not that it's 40 minutes. Like I'm sure you can do one that's 40 minutes, it's fine. The issue with the NXT ones is that you know that nothing can happen until everybody's out. So you've got to wait for how many people to leave a pod? Like 4 on each one? So you've got to wait at least 20 minutes before you can see anything happen. And that, I think, really takes you out of it. And I mean, I'm not very familiar with War Games from the old school War Games. Was that the same in those ones?
No, they were much shorter. And you'd have your opening, I think it was a 5-minute period, and then an entrant from each team would go in every 2 minutes. So the matches would never last anywhere near 40 minutes. I mean, this was an NXT idea.
So in the old version, what was the longest period where, like, you couldn't... Because in the NXT one, it was 20 minutes before you could get any form of finish.
Well, you'd have that opening sequence between the two guys, and then someone from each team would come in. I think it was every 2 minutes. I'm sure this is right. It wasn't every 5 minutes. And obviously, it would be the heel team that would win the coin toss. For psychology purposes, there's got to be two heels and one babyface. So the babyfaces come, you know, that it's just a basic wrestling psychology. It always has to be two heels on one face. Then someone else from the face team turns up and it's all even. The faces make the big comeback. Then someone else from the heel team joins up. Then the heels get the big beat down on the faces. And it's just all just how you just book wrestling, you know, dating back to the beginning of when it was booked, you know, going back 100 years when they started working it. So, I mean, that was the way it was done. So it was a very fast-moving match because you'd only have that 2-minute period and you always have lots of stuff going on in that 2 minutes, and then it wouldn't be long before that next person was entering the cage. And then when everyone's in there, they'd lock the cage door, let War Games begin, and it was submission or surrender. It wasn't pinfall. That was not the way it was originally. So someone had to submit. So, you know, there was no pins. And someone said, well, you know, you can't get that heat because you haven't got the near falls. Well, that wasn't the point of it. And when you've got all those people going at it, and obviously you've got that last little bump from the final member of the babyface team joining, so then it's all equal, and usually the babyfaces are getting stuck in and beating down the heels and people are going mad. Well, not all War Games were great, of course. Some of them actually were really terrible, but I would say the most of them were. And when they were done right, with performers who were over, wrestlers who were over, then they usually were very successful because the concept really was almost a can't miss. If you had of those 10 or 8 people who were in there, if say at least 5 of them were over, you couldn't really go wrong. But I think the AEW one, blood and guts, clues in the title, there's going to be a lot of blood. Obviously, there's going to be. They're allowed to do that. They don't mind doing the blood. And that's something they really make a big deal out of when people blade. So I think we're going to go back to that sort of old school blood and guts type War Games match. So it's going to be very different to the way that NXT has done it. And that's absolutely the right direction that AEW should go, because they don't have the talent to be able to do what NXT can do in the ring. The NXT talent roster in the ring are better than the AEW talent roster. But what AEW has, it has a different set of characters and a different way of booking things. And if they maximize their strengths, which I'm sure they will do in a match of this magnitude and caliber, you know, I know this is something that Cody is going to personally want to be a huge success. I'm sure they've been working on this one for a long time. And I think really, I don't think they're really going to be able to go too far wrong with it, so long as they don't try and do a 40-minute match, Kenny.
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to... to the match because I want to like War Games, but the NXT version has just never really been my thing. So I'm hoping, and the other thing that AEW has in their wheelhouse or in their arsenal is that, you know, Jericho can have conversations about how he thinks it should go and they are taken seriously. Hager's the same. It's kind of very collaborative.
Sure.
So, you know, it's not one of those things where it has been decided how the match is going to be laid out or how to plan it, what the rules are, and you don't have any say. I'm sure it's going to be those guys are going to get together and are going to talk, and everybody's feedback is going to come into it. And I think that is important because, you know, they're going to want to make sure everybody looks good in the match. And the idea of having Paige in there and he doesn't really want to be in the Elite anymore, that's an interesting story point.
Yeah.
You know, is that the night he's going to turn? We've talked before about how we could see them dragging out to Double or Nothing, but maybe they make the turn here.
The story is going to be furthered. Whatever happens, even if he doesn't do the turn, there's going to be hints dropped that it's drawing ever closer that day when he's from Omega and the rest of the Elite.
And there's even little things that AEW are not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, see the women's division, but one of the things they do quite well is like little details that call back to stuff like when MJF won that battle royal for, you know, the Diamond Dozen or whatever it was called, Dozen, and he won the ring. And we were all kind of like, why has he won a ring? Like, and then he used the ring to beat Cody in the big pay-per-view match. So it was called back as to why he, you know, that was something he was able to use from something he'd won before. So I'm hoping that in the match they're going to use some callbacks. They're going to reward you for having watched the show. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it. So Raw last night.
So am I. Yeah, I think it's going to be a hit. I really do. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it. I think it's going to be very different from the War Games matches that we've seen in recent years, and that will be for the best.
And we will cover it here, of course, and have some stuff to say about it once it's happened. So Raw last night was the continuing build to WrestleMania. I thought that the first 2 hours were really good, really vibrant show. I thought it kind of fell off a cliff with the 8-man tag main event, but overall I thought it did some decent build to WrestleMania. What did you think of the show overall before we get into some of the specifics?
I like parts of it. I felt like that. I have no idea what they were thinking with that final match. Just no idea. It feels like we've been watching this match every week for like 6 or 7 weeks. I mean, it's just like, or some combination of those people in the ring. And it just feels kind of lifeless throughout there far too long. That was the real downside of Raw. Tell me what I liked on the show. I enjoyed Angel Garza versus Rey Mysterio. I thought that was a really lively match. I think Garza's somebody's one to watch. I hope he's somebody that they stay with.
Well, he's passed the test, right? He's staying on the main roster for now, which is good.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ricochet was on main event this week, Kenny. So, I mean, just because he's still...
Was he?
Yes. I believe he was wrestling Eric Young. Do you just want to check that out? Just
sure. Did he win? Right?
I think he did do.
It's just worth asking that question at this point, isn't it?
Well, it is. And it's just like, I read somewhere that he's wanting a transfer back to NXT, and Cedric Alexander's, I know, voiced his frustration on his Twitter page for a long time about how upset he is about the direction he's... careers going in, you know, downward. I mean, to me, these guys should be asking for the releases. I mean, what is the point of sticking around? You know, these guys could be players in AEW or possibly back on NXT. Maybe WWE won't give them a release, but at least if they say to WWE, listen, I'm not happy, I just feel like you're damaging my career, you're damaging my future earning potential by using me in this fashion, which they absolutely are, can I have a release, please? And if not, will you take me off TV? And I think if I was those guys, I would sooner do that than continue to be beaten up each week by their booking.
You are correct, though. Ricochet did beat Eric Young on main event.
Oh, big win. You know, a few weeks from now, we will be saying that in all seriousness. Don't laugh. So, yeah, Angel Garza versus Rey Mysterio, really good action there. Mysterio won. I'm hoping Garza's going to do something meaningful at WrestleMania. He's a guy, I think first time I saw him was probably in Impact Wrestling. I think I might have seen him before that, actually. And I wasn't convinced that he was going to do as well as he has in WWE when he finally got to NXT and then to WWE. But, I mean, he has really put it together. I mean, some of those matches in NXT were great, and he's doing a really good job interacting with the audience, and he's got a lot of fire, pizzazz, a lot of charisma. There's a lot going on there, a lot they can work with, so I really enjoyed that. Backstage, we had a segment filmed earlier in the day where AOP, Murphy and Rollins had confronted Kevin Owens backstage when he was arriving at the venue, beat him up. So, I mean, that set up his appearance later on the show in the main event. Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley had a little confrontation. I mean, Charlotte, she just exudes a sense of superiority, doesn't she, Kenny?
She does. She's got star power.
She has.
And that's, and I actually thought the video package they did on Rhea Ripley right before this at the stadium was great. Really good. Kind of gave you the gravitas of what it is for her to be competing at WrestleMania. And then Charlotte just, you know, the dick that she is, brings her right back down to earth, and then Rhea punches her in the mouth. I thought it was a really solid piece of business.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I think they show that Rhea Ripley video on NXT. Yes, they did. I thought I had seen it before.
But that is something you should put on the, you know, put it on Raw where over 2 million people are going to see it.
Absolutely, because people still don't really know who Rhea Ripley is. I mean, okay, they saw her back in Survivor Series time, but they've only seen like a few appearances from her. They haven't really seen her in the ring that much. The main roster audience. So, I mean, this was enjoyable. I feel assured that Rhea Ripley's going to do all right at WrestleMania. I have a feeling that she's going to retain against Charlotte. So I think she's going to have a good night. I'm not convinced that Shayna's going to have a good night. And I think it could well be all over for her after she loses to Becky Lynch, because I can't see her beating Becky Lynch.
Well, speaking of which, I actually wanted to disagree with you, Finn, because sometimes it's too harmonious on this podcast. I loved Becky Lynch's promo on this show. I thought it was great. I thought that finally she was, you know, we've talked on the podcast before about how after Becky beat Ronda Rousey at WrestleMania last year, she's just kind of floundered ever since. You know, there's not really been an opponent for her to sink her teeth into. Now, the irony of that was Shayna Baszler. But now it felt like she finally had a feud that she's going to get into. And what I liked about it was she put over Shayna while also giving you her case as to why she thinks she can beat her. You know, she said, you know, you're a cage fighter, you're someone who should be, you know, you can kill people, whatever. But remember, I'm the one who took your friend's title and broke her hand. And, you know, the idea, she said, you know, you're underestimating me, I'm going to smash your face in for it. So I like the story of Shayna's walking in, the cocky badass who ruled NXT, and Becky is aware of what Shayna's got to offer, but thinks that she's underestimating her, and that's, you know, she's almost pinpointing where Shayna's downfall is going to be. So I liked it, and I think they're building the match fairly well. And while the Elimination Chamber match maybe wasn't the best, you know, it could have been presented better in the ways that we spoke about earlier. I think it was solid, and I think Becky and Shayna's going to be a good match. A big test for Shayna though at WrestleMania, because she's not had, you know, she had the Survivor Series match which didn't really go her way.
No.
The crowd died on it. So Becky and Shayna really need to knock it out of the park at WrestleMania. There's no excuses.
Yeah, I mean, well, they didn't have the firecracker of a match at Elimination Chamber. I mean, the match with Kairi Sane pretty much bombed previous week. I mean, to me, there was a huge alarm bells going off there, Kenny, when Becky Lynch referred to her as a black hole of charisma and a constipated-looking robot. That's Vince talk. That's what Vince thinks of her. So, yeah, I have a lot of concerns about the match. Lynch is, I think, going to win. I think Shayna will lose by submission to Becky Lynch to the Disarmer at WrestleMania. And I'm not quite sure what Shayna's future will be after that. I think she'll be in a lot of trouble. So, I'm really worried about this match, Kenny. I really am. I think it's going to really struggle on the night. That's my opinion.
Where would you place it on the card at WrestleMania? If it was up to you and you wanted to give it its maximum chance of success, where would you place it?
As early as possible. I would get it on first or second. Just there was no reason for Becky Lynch to refer to her as a black hole of charisma, because sadly she is. I mean, I think she's actually in NXT, has a lot of personality, but that's not transferred to the main roster. And as some people, it just doesn't work in a big arena setting. I mean, Kairi Sane has been one of the biggest NXT to WWE flops. Not quite as bad as EC3, but not far off when you actually think of how successful she was in NXT. And she has just done terrible on the main roster. So, I mean, Shayna, I don't know, it's a constipated looking robot. Why say that? You're just belittling her. You're making fun of her. So I think Shayna's got to come back with something from that. I don't know what she's going to do, but she needs something where she's connected with the audience, and that can't involve biting Becky Lynch in the neck, which ultimately was pointless. She needs like a match, or she needs something that really gets over. And I'm not quite sure what that could be.
Maybe that will be a TV match with Asuka.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, she needs something that fans are responding to and treating her as a star. She needs a match that really clicks and really ignites the crowd and Vince McMahon. You know, Vince, as we know, for years has never been a fan of Shayna. You know, he thinks she's too old. There's a lot of things about her that he doesn't like. And I think he's kind of had his arm twisted into bringing up to use her as Becky Lynch's opponent at WrestleMania. Also, the problem, of course, is who else is there? So, I mean, that's part of the reason as well that she got greenlit for this gig. But, I mean, I'm not convinced that Vince sees her as a future star on one of his big programs. I'm really not. So, yeah, it needs to go on early in the show. They cannot put it on like, you know, match number 8 or match number 9. Otherwise, I think it's going to do even worse. But if it goes on early and Shayna can somehow come back from this from this Becky Lynch promo on yesterday's Raw, if she can come back with something that really is, you know, really animates the audience and really makes it seem like she's got a lot of fire and got a lot of personality. What she basically needs to do is she needs to disprove what Becky Lynch has just said about her. And if she can do that, then she might be all right if the match goes on early. Otherwise, yeah, I'm really concerned about this match.
So we saw Drew McIntyre in action on Raw, beat Eric Rowan. The big story, though, was that Drew McIntyre... Drew McIntyre murdered a spider on Raw by murdering the cage that Eric Rowan had caged his big mechanical spider. Got the win. So 4 months of squash matches to reveal a mechanical spider, which causes the following week for Drew McIntyre to kill it with the ring steps. And that is the end of that.
Yeah, just incredible. We only discovered, didn't we, last week on the match, second Raw, what was in the cage.
And funnily enough, that was it. Once you reveal a mechanical spider, there's nowhere else left to go.
I think we can safely say that the spider did not get over with Vince McMahon.
No. And you know, that spider and Rowan could have been tag team champions. There could have been merchandise. There could have been, you know, an Arachnophobia spin-off movie or sequel under WB Studios' umbrella.
Guest appearances in the Firefly Funhouse.
There you go. So many missed opportunities. But
I mean, it's all over now. I mean, you know, that spider could have even appeared in that Anna and Bruce Willis movie.
But I did enjoy the Drew and Heyman video package later on. I thought that was good. I liked the idea of Heyman sort of talking shit and then Drew getting to kind of respond to it. Can I just, you know, slowly continue to build the match and not giving us, you know, not having them face off and beat each other up every week?
Yeah, I mean, after last week, I mean, because that was such a, you know, Brock Lesnar was out and then Drew came out. I thought that was a really good angle on the match, second Raw, where Drew's in the ring and then Lesnar's leaving, then tries to surprise Drew with an attack and Drew nails him with the claymore and then hits him twice more on the stage with two more. I mean, that was just like a dynamite angle, wasn't it, for Drew? I mean, he didn't really need to be on... I mean, in fact, he didn't need to be on Raw at all. This whole Rowan match should never have happened. That was really beneath him when you think about it. What's a guy who's presumably beating Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania doing wrestling Eric Rowan and then smashing a mechanical spider with the ring steps? You know, have we had a reaction yet from the... Is it PETA?
PETA, yeah. I don't think PETA have quite got around to this, but I assume that the Association of Prevention of Harm to Mechanical Spiders will have a field day.
Is it the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals?
Yes,
acronyms for
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, we need a comment from them about the spider. I mean, hopefully, maybe no one's brought it to their attention yet. But I mean, it's just like, yeah, Drew really shouldn't have been in that situation. He'd had such a huge night on the March 2nd Raw. I mean, I thought that was tremendous. Just that was like the best thing on that episode of Raw. We didn't really talk about it last week because we were reviewing AEW and NXT. But I mean, I thought Drew had a tremendous night there. That was the best thing he's done since Royal Rumble. So he didn't need to be doing anything with Lesnar again. I hope they only really have one more confrontation between now and WrestleMania. Otherwise, it could end up deflating. I think they've created something quite magical so far. And I think this match can be, I'm not saying it's going to be the best thing at WrestleMania, but I think Drew Lesnar will be one of the best matches at WrestleMania. That's probably the match I'm most looking forward to the most, if I'm honest.
I do also very quickly want to give props to, I loved Kairi Sane and Asuka's gloating promo at the beginning of their, before they had the tag match where they beat Natalya and Liv Morgan. They're just so captivating and kind of charismatic, even though we don't know what they're saying most of the time. But they just crack me up. The other thing I was going to ask you about was we got AJ Styles' promo where he talked about, you know, he thought that when Undertaker lost to Roman Reigns 3 years ago and left all his gear, that was him riding off into the sunset, and now he keeps coming back. AJ thought he should have left when Brock Lesnar ended the streak. He said he would have been hesitant about calling out the Undertaker of 10 or 15 years ago, but he no longer sees him as a mythical monster or a phenom. He said, "What I do see is a broken down man named Mark Calloway. Taker should have retired in his prime. I know why you keep coming back. It's his wife, Michelle McCool. Michelle plays Taker like a fiddle, and whatever she wants, she gets, despite her husband getting hurt every time. She's driving him into the ground, and at WrestleMania, he's going to help her. He's going to make sure that Undertaker dies in the ring at WrestleMania. He's going to take his soul, and he's going to do exactly what his wife wants him to do. Challenge them one-on-one. Come on, Taker. You've already lost your dignity, your pride, your mystique. Like I said, you're just a broken-down old man." And challenges him for WrestleMania and says he will literally put the nail in Undertaker's coffin. Hell of a promo, but maybe it would have been a better idea to not have Undertaker kill him twice before we get this promo.
Exactly. He's referring to him as a broken down old man. I mean, what occurred to me was Styles needed to do something like this after what they've... I mean, it's just that crazy thing that WWE sometimes does. And other companies do it as well, but WWE seems to be the most frequent offender, where they create a situation that is totally unnecessary. And then they have to kind of sort of climb, you have to somehow, they've digged this hole for this guy or more than one guy or a woman. And then they've got to try and pull themselves out of the hole to try and, you know, salvage some dignity from what WWE has just done to them before this big match occurs. And it does seem that way with Styles, where they've just had Undertaker turn up and totally dominate him. And obviously at Super Showdown, it wasn't, as I said on that review of the show that we did, I mean, Styles had plenty of time to plan his strategy as the Undertaker's walking to the ring. It took what? It was a few minutes, wasn't it, between him beating up Gallows and Anderson backstage and him actually getting to the ring, their little choke slam, their little interaction there. And Styles could say, well, you know, you surprised me at the Elimination Chamber. But we're in this situation with Styles where he's been so devastated, he's just annihilated by The Undertaker, that the only way of really creating any interest in this feud now is for Styles to resort to this to drum up interest. So he's got to kind of, you know, can you imagine like back in, you know, 10 years ago, WWE doing something like this where they would have a wrestler talking about Undertaker was Mark Calloway, who's married to Michelle McCool. So it's like we've got to introduce this reality into the storyline in order to make it interesting, which, you know, it's kind of like he's saying, oh, well, I don't see this mythical monster anymore. I don't see, you know, the pride, mystique, the dignity's all gone. And kind of this promo fuels that and furthers that, because we're not talking about the Undertaker as this character that we think he is. We're presenting him as a real person who's pretending to be this character. So it's very strange, but I do understand. I do kind of understand why they've done it, because they've put Styles into such a difficult position that the only way that anyone's really going to be interested in this match is by doing something completely different. And this is their solution to the problem that they, or the cure to this problem that they've created for themselves. But I thought Styles did a really good job on the promo. They're doing a contract signing next week for Undertaker and AJ Styles. And it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. Will Undertaker acknowledge any of these things that Styles mentioned on this week's Raw?
Well, you'd hope so. Because we should mention, nobody has prodded the Undertaker character like this in years.
No.
And I thought this was AJ's best promo in years. AJ's been a bit of a buffoon promo, and I know that's worked for a lot of people. It hasn't really worked as well for me, but I thought this was a money promo. And he brought that, you know, going into this show, I couldn't really care less about Undertaker and AJ Styles because of the two beatdowns.
Yeah.
But it was AJ Styles that got me back interested into the match. So I think he deserves a lot of praise for this.
He does, yeah. He does. I mean, the delivery was good. And it was totally unexpected, which is, you know, this feud had been reduced to tattered. It was just in pieces. And like, here we are, Styles is trying to put the whole thing back together. So to try and create something that's going to be a match to remember on the night. I guess the drawback is, what exactly can The Undertaker do at this point in his career? I mean, he looked really old at Super Showdown, and he looked really rough at Elimination Chamber just in what little he did. So, I mean, what is the payoff going to be? How long can the match go? He did all right in that tag match last year, didn't he, after the...
The one with Roman against Drew and Shane.
Yeah, I mean, that match, he had a good night there. So, I mean, maybe he can do more than we think he can. But I feel like he had something to prove after the debacle that was the Goldberg match, that I think he felt like he needed to come back swinging, and he needed to prove that he still had something to offer WWE. And if he can't have a good match with Styles, mind you, we've said this before. I mean, Styles has had some misses in this company with Samoa Joe, particularly
Kevin Owens.
We've talked about that before. You just hope that it's not going to be a squash on the night. I mean, and that's obviously what happened in the Cena match. When was that? Not last year, year before, wasn't it? 2 years ago, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
2018, yeah. So, I mean, all this, there better be something at the end of it, Kenny. And the problem is, many times in recent history, there's been nothing. It's been like an empty present as The Undertaker's WrestleMania match. So it's hard for me to get excited about it. But, I mean, I think they had to do something extraordinary and completely, out of the box here, and they did do that.
There's not really much to say about that boring 8-man main event with Rollins and his faction. I mean, it's all building to this Kevin Owens Seth Rollins match, because Rollins beat Owens up post match.
Owens came in and Rollins hit him with, I think it was, 3 curb stomps in total.
Yeah, so that was kind of the big story there. But the other big story on the show was the return of Edge, which was facilitated through an MVP promo, where he basically said that he wanted to be Edge's manager or the brain behind him. He said he thinks he can get a title back to Edge. He just needs to focus.
And I tell you, MVP's not having a good time. His recruitment drive, this is his second time. His second time he's struck out, isn't it?
Yeah, he's calling in all these friendships, and he is not being successful.
It's not.
As he's doing this promo, we cut backstage to Edge arriving. He just basically takes his jacket off, takes his hat off, comes out, takes the mic from MVP. Once Randy Orton, MVP ends up goading Edge into spearing him. Orton comes out at the top of the ramp, and Edge concertos MVP twice as he stares at Orton. He also RKOs MVP. And then Edge chases down Randy Orton. The fans were going crazy for it. How did this play? I know that you weren't a big fan of the execution of last week's angle with Beth Phoenix. Was this a return to form in terms of building the Edge and Randy Orton match? Was it a hit or a miss?
I think actually he hit the RKO on Randy Orton, didn't he?
No, he hit the RKO on MVP.
Oh, right.
He didn't get to Randy Orton.
Oh, right.
No,
okay.
No, did he? No, it was on MVP. Am I imagining it? I'm sure it was on MVP.
I think he speared MVP, didn't he? Because MVP started...
Oh, yeah. He did RKO Randy Orton. Sorry.
That's
I had a complete brain fart. He RKO'd Randy Orton, and then he RKO'd MVP as well. That's what I'm thinking of. So,
okay,
because he RKO'd MVP on the chair.
Yes.
After he'd done it to Orton, so that's the one that I was getting confused about. But yeah, so he had it on both.
Yeah, because he brought the chairs in, because he was going to do the concerto to Randy Orton, wasn't he? And then Randy Orton escaped. MVP's still in the ring, so he ends up doing it to MVP. And, like, Randy Orton's there in the aisle looking at him. You know, we've got that tremendous WWE. You know, we don't say enough about WWE's production and camera work. And they do such a great job on these angles, don't they? They've got, like, camera on Randy for his reactions. We've got Edge there. You know, this is for you. You know, and all this carry on. And so, I mean, I wasn't a fan of the Randy Orton, Beth Phoenix angle. I watched it again, actually, to get the transcript for the quotes for WrestleTalk magazine. And I thought it was even worse second time. I thought Beth Phoenix's responses were just so incongruous. It was just like, why are you reacting like this to Randy Orton's comments? And I anyway, let's talk about match the ninth. Simon Edge's whole business. He comes, turns up, and MVP's really funny. I mean, MVP made the comeback. I mean, he was terrible in the ring, but I think he's been really good in these segments. I thought it was tremendous. In the segment with Drew McIntyre, thought it was a barrel of laughs there. Really, you know, just doing all the stuff with the heel and really, I thought, really doing a lot to really put the younger guys over. I mean, I know Edge is older than, I think Edge is actually older than MVP or about the same age, but he did a really good job with Drew McIntyre. I thought he really put Drew over, and he did a really good job here with Edge as well. And he was integral to the success of this angle. So, I mean, I think MVP's work in these angles with Drew and Edge as, you know, all sins forgiven. How was that match with, was it the match with Rey Mysterio? He had a match with Rey Mysterio, didn't he?
The night after the Rumble.
And it was dire. So, I mean, all sins forgiven there. I mean, he really didn't do anything in the Rumble either. But I thought he's been really good here. So, I mean, I thought it was well done, with Edge coming in. They didn't do too much, and I was concerned that they might. Because, I mean, we've still got a few weeks to go until WrestleMania. And the last thing you want to do is peak too early, which they've done many times before with many matches at many WrestleManias over the last 10 years or so. So Edge hitting the RKO, I thought, was a really nice touch. And then he wanted to do the concerto. Obviously, he couldn't do the concerto on Randy Orton. He can't get full revenge until WrestleMania. So Orton had to bail, which was the right thing for him to do as well. So I thought it was a nice, it furthered the storyline, and that's what it needed to do. They could have done a lot more. I don't know, what's the reaction to the angle been? Have people been impressed by it? Have they been disappointed because Edge didn't do more to Orton? What's the general response been to this angle, Kenny?
The general response I've seen has been pretty positive.
Okay.
Kind of similar to you, like, people are kind of questioning MVP's success rate of his of his strategy. But for the most part, I mean, I think kind of to what you're saying, people got a bit, they didn't get it all, there's more coming.
Yeah.
So I think people are just kind of in for the story.
Yeah, I thought it was well done. I mean, it's the thing with Edge happily now, because he's got a lot of goodwill still, and obviously there was the big angle the night after Royal Rumble that was so well done, like best angle of the year by a mile. The thing with Edge is that he's got so many heel characteristics that if he wasn't up against such a pure evil villain like Orton, he always runs the risk of being booed, because there's so many heelish aspects to the Edge character when you think about it. He's not really, like, if you think back to like 20 years ago, Edge and Christian doing the comedy, they were fun baby faces. I mean, I know they were playing heels a lot, but people really liked them because they were providing so much entertainment. You know, the rated R superstar Edge that he became in late 2005, I think it was, it's such a villain. It's such a natural heel. And whenever he's tried to be a baby face, he struggled. You know, when he came back in 2010, it was, wasn't it? When he came back for the Jericho feud.
Yeah, it won the Rumble.
That's right, yeah. He really struggled as a babyface at Edge there. But I think he's going to be all right here because now we're 10 years on, you know, he's got all this, there's all this love for him because he's come back from these, you know, devastating neck injury. And most importantly, Orton is such a proper nasty piece of work. So I think they're going to be all right. But against anyone else, Edge, I think Edge could have been in trouble. But yeah, really enjoyed the angle. Just gave us enough that, you know, leave them wanting more. And they did that perfectly.
And next week we're going to have, like you say, the Undertaker AJ Styles contract signing. Maybe we'll see Edge again. We've also got Austin on the show to celebrate it being 316 in American digits of dates. And then I think it's following that his Broken Skull sessions with Bret Hart is on there. So,
oh my God.
Anyway, so Finn, any plugs for people before we head off and record the overrun and we look back at 2004 to the era of JBL? Oh, yay.
That's right. Yeah, in fact, we're going to be covering issue 123 of Power Slam, which has Randy Orton on the front cover, coincidentally.
Any plugs, though, before we...
No plugs at all. Kenny, you fire away with your plugs.
Well, you can get tickets to our live events at insidetheropes.co.uk/events. Kevin Owens next Friday. Trish Stratus on the 20th of April. Kenny Omega on April 17th and 19th. You can also go to youtube.com/insidetheropes for interview content. Mustache Mountain and Page interviews up there now from this week. And much, much more coming. And of course, patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you can listen to this podcast 24 hours early. You get an overrun with us. There's interviews that go up. Finn did a four-pager with Jim Ross, which is great. Retro content. We'll be reviewing WrestleMania 2000 in a few weeks. So plenty of content up there. Please do support us if you enjoy what we do, because it means that we can keep on doing it and getting Finn to take time out of his retirement to come and grace the peasants like us with his presence.
Kenny, given the recent performance of the stock market, there's no chance of me retiring anytime soon.
So thank you for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.